Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So two things, obviously, going back to what Kevin Randall was talking about. We mentioned, of course, the influence of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the car engine spontaneously restarts after the object leaves, and maybe that's not quite what happened. Back to Roswell.
Let me just interject here. I think given the time frame that movie was made, that was the consensus, with the car engines would start spontaneously. So I don't think that's a Hollywood embellishment. I think it, of course, spread the idea much further because of the popularity of that film. But I think the idea was at that time that the cars would start spontaneously, and they would look at the case file, and the witness would say, the object was gone and the car started, you know. It suggests spontaneous, but it doesn't really say that.
What's sad is that question didn't seem to be properly answered. But going back to Roswell and things like weird evidence that we talk about, you know, fiber optics, things like that, how much of that could have been corrupted by the decades before we really were able to gather significant testimony?
Given the number of science fiction films, given the number of books about UFOs, the magazine articles and the documentaries and everything you want to point to, there's always the possibility all these things were corrupted by those influences. So you have to look at that carefully, and you have to compare the testimonies of the various witnesses with one another to see if there's a variance that suggests some kind of corruption. When I did Roswell in the 21st century, my idea was to look at the case as a cold case and bring in all that information again and sort through it to see if there were corroborations or there were places where things diverted terribly, and suggested that there was a cultural influence involved in that. And I think some of the people, John Keel, we got into the big argument in 1990 with John Keel over the idea that what fell at Roswell was a Japanese balloon bomb. Thoroughly discredited idea based on all the research and everything we learned about it. But his idea sparked this research. And one of the things he said at the time, he says, well, I suppose by the turn of the century, which would be 2000, there'll be another 100 or 200 witnesses clamoring for their 15 minutes of fame, meaning that the people would pick up on the story and insert them into it. And we found that by 2000, there were an awful lot of people claiming that they had some involvement in Roswell. One guy claimed he was a youngster, and his dad had been assigned to the base right field at the time, and he was flown into Roswell, and the son went with him to help investigate the UFOs. I'm thinking, well, that's not only cockamamie, it's ridiculous. You don't take your son on a mission where you're going to be dealing with classified materials. So the story was bogus, but he was inserting himself into the story. Another guy was named Trowbridge, who was actually in Roswell, assigned to the base, and claimed that on the night that Jesse Marcel brought the material back from the debris field and woke up his son to show it to him, he said that there had been a bridge party. And back, I guess, in the 1940s, bridge parties were big deals, especially around military installations, at the Marcel house. And that when Jesse Marcel came home from the debris field, he had the box of debris with him, and they all went out and looked at it. So Trowbridge was claiming that he'd seen the debris and might be the last person alive. It was in his obituary, the last person alive who'd actually handled the Roswell debris. Story's completely bogus. Absolutely no evidence that Beau Marcel was holding a bridge party without her husband there. And the son said that Jesse Marcel Jr. said that his father woke him up to show him the debris. He thought it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it was much earlier in the evening than that. I think that given the age of Jesse Marcel, he was probably in bed earlier than that. But the point really is, Trowbridge didn't handle the debris. He didn't see the debris, but he injected himself in the story. And there were a number of people like that who injected themselves in the story. And as Don and I did the research, and then Tom Carey and Don did more research, we were able to separate out some of the nonsense from the reality of the situation based on the testimonies of a lot of other people and the documentation available to us. So we could see who was injecting him or herself, and it's mostly him, himself, into the case and how it deviated from the true narrative that we were able to establish based on the limited documentation we had and that sort of thing, and how their stories kind of placed them in a position to see the debris that didn't really make a whole lot of sense given who they were.
But we do know something happened. I mean, at least we know that much, and nobody really has an explanation for it yet.
And that's the whole point. When I did Roswell in the 21st century, that was the conclusion I came to. I said, any explanation you offer doesn't work. When you look at the totality of the evidence, the one that the Air Force seized on and a great number of skeptics have seized on was Project Mogul. And what annoys me about this, if I have a document that supports a skeptical point of view, the skeptics all accept it as absolutely authentic. It is great. Here, it proves that you're wrong. When I have a document that suggests Project Mogul never flew, they say, well, you've got to interpret this way. You've got to look at it.
Yeah, they have their own sense of self-serving.
Yeah, yeah. Project Mogul as an explanation for Roswell. And in Roswell in the 21st century, I devote a long appendix to this, giving all the nuances of it. But the point is, Dr. Albert Crary was the chief of the project in New Mexico in 1947. It was called the New York University Balloon Project. What they were doing in New Mexico was not highly classified. The ultimate purpose of Mogul was, but what they were doing in New Mexico was not classified. Crary's diary says flat out, no balloon flight today. It would have been flight number four, the culprit in this. He said, no balloon flight today because of clouds. These long arrays from the Mogul balloon arrays were considered a hazard to aerial navigation, and they were not allowed to fly them at night because a plane could fly into it and cause trouble. They weren't allowed to fly them if it was cloudy weather because they could be hidden in the clouds and a plane would fly into them. So we have Crary's diaries and no balloon flight today. Because of clouds. So we know exactly it didn't fly. They say later on we flew a cluster of balloons with a sonoboy. Yeah. And we know exactly what that is, and it's nothing like what was described on the Brazel Ranch. There is no Project Mogul explanation. But when you point to Crary's diary, they give you all these reasons why that diary is inaccurate. Here's the guy that's in charge of the project writing his notes that very day. We have Charles Moore, who was part of the Mogul project. The New York University Balloon Project in New Mexico, making stuff up, and we can prove that. He said originally that they launched the balloon at dawn, which is like 5:30 in the morning, but the weather data suggested a front had come through around that same time, which is why there were the clouds, of course, and he backed the flight up, the launch, to 2:30 in the morning or 3:30 in the morning, launching it in the dark so that the winds aloft data would enable him to put it closer to the Brazel Ranch. I mean, you look at his research, and he changes it.
That's actually bogus, because without going to any of those particular sources, that, like the skeptic sources, this is one of the things I like to do. I don't look at the skeptic sources or the pro-ufology ones. I went and looked at the weather records myself for all of the levels in the atmosphere from the point where they launched those balloons to where it was supposed to have crashed, and none of the winds were going in that direction. So unless this thing was under some kind of power, how could it possibly, any balloon?
The other thing is, I gave the winds aloft data to Charles Moore. I had gotten them from our research into Roswell, and the winds aloft data only goes to 20,000 feet. He later found that White Sands kept winds aloft data to 50,000 feet, which was better because the balloons would be floating at those levels at much higher than 20,000 feet.
Yeah, they're supposed to go way up there and to pick up atomic bomb.
But the real point is, once Moore realized that the winds aloft data gathered from 6 o'clock in the morning, and they gathered it like every 4 hours, took the balloon in a different direction. He changed the launch time so it would better conform to the plot. And the other thing is, he never got to the Brazel Ranch. He got it within 17 miles of the Brazel Ranch using his winds aloft data, but 17 miles away isn't on the Brazel Ranch.
We have a question from Randall, of Kevin Randall, waiting in the wings, but we have a few messages to fly before us here. That's a bad pun. With Gene Randall and Kevin Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Dahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at shopsupertea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's shopsupertea.com or call 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Dan Perkins here for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. The VA recently reported that 70% of all veteran suicides are by vets who have never been to the VA. There's a saying, when a person's name is written down where people can see it, that person will never be forgotten. Many of our veterans, past and present, feel that nobody cares about them. We will be holding the first Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Memorial Tournament. All the proceeds will go to purchase MP3 players for veterans. I know that veterans and their families all over the country will hear this announcement and not be able to play at the golf outing, but want to help. So here's your veterans tip of the day. If you have a family member or a friend that is a veteran, for $100 you can honor them and make sure they will never be forgotten. Go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and sponsor a tea or a green in their name. Keep their memory alive. This has been your veterans tip of the day.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Kevin D. Randall talking about Roswell in the background. I got a bunch of other subjects we want to get into, but Randall Murphy has a question.
Well, okay, so like you were saying, Kevin, then what would be the motivation for these people? I mean, you've got the PhD in psychology. Is it just because they don't want to be wrong, or are they actually trying to cover something up here?
if you're talking about Charles Moore, he wanted to be the guy that launched the Roswell spacecraft. And that became important to him, that he was responsible for what fell on the ranch. It was his project that got it to the Roswell Ranch. And he would manipulate the data and that sort of thing to get it to where he wanted to go. Russ Estes and I were doing a documentary, I think Roswell remembered, and we were interviewing him in his house. And we had the camera set up, and I asked him a question, and he fiddly fumbled around and wouldn't really answer it. I asked the question again, and he wouldn't do it. Russ finally asked the question, and he gave him an answer. Moore didn't want to give me the information, even though I'd been to his house a couple of times and we'd had fine discussions. It had come to the point where now I was the adversary. I wasn't searching for the truth. I had an agenda. Well, Moore had an agenda as well. He's talking about people who want to inject themselves into the Roswell story. People do that all the time. At the turn of the last century, 1900, there were 15 people traveling with carnivals claiming to be the real Jesse James. Well, you know, 14 of them had to be lying, and the 15th was too, but you knew 14 of them were lying, but that was how they...
Right, so I guess, you know, it's not just the believers that want to inject themselves into the story, it's anybody that wants to just get into the story.
It's people who want their 15 minutes of fame, it's people who see maybe a way of making some money, although in ufology there's not a lot of money to be made.
Well, unless you were Santilli, I guess, because he did pretty good with the fake autopsy.
That really wasn't ufology. That was hoax. But, you know, people want to inject themselves into it. I don't know how many people claim to be Vietnam veterans who never were in Vietnam, who never served in the military. In 1969, when I came back from Vietnam, you know, everybody hated the Vietnam veterans because we were just a bunch of baby killers. I guess setting up policy on our own and running rampant in Vietnam, which of course was the narrative. Now, of course, we're all heroes, but it suddenly changed to this was something people wanted you to believe they had been involved in Vietnam. It became sort of a status symbol. I was a combat veteran in Vietnam, to the point where if somebody tells me he is a Vietnam veteran, I say he, because in the Army, there were like 25 women who were in Vietnam as soldiers, and they were clerks and that sort of thing. There were many, many more who were nurses in Vietnam. But for the most part, the guys claiming to be combat veterans, and it's ridiculous. So that when somebody tells me he's been a combat veteran, my default setting now is to disbelieve him, unless he can come up with the jargon. That suggests he was in fact there. He knows things that you would know only if had you been there, that Hollywood gets wrong all the time, but you understand these things. You can point to the things and say, that's not right. That's not how it was. But
one of those people who could pick that out fairly easily, I would imagine. See, being a helicopter pilot yourself, just getting away maybe a bit from Vietnam, or maybe Vietnam, do you know other vets, other military pilots, or have you yourself had any experience or UFO encounter or sighting yourself?
Well, I know a lot of military pilots, both in the Army and the Air Force. And one of the guys told me about the Kinross case. This is the F-94 that disappeared over Lake Superior in 1954. They were watching the thing on radar. It was a scrambled mission, and the blips merged and never separated, and they never found the airplane. I actually talked to a couple of pilots who were there at the time and told me about other sightings going on, and it was something that was going on at that time. And there were two schools of thought, is that one of them was the UFO, whatever it was, took the airplane, and the other was it crashed into Lake Superior. And he told me that they had been on a flight trying to intercept an object, and he called the brake to turn into it to see what would happen, and then the object just flew off and disappeared. So, yeah, I've talked to pilots who have had UFO experiences. As a military pilot, I never had a UFO experience. The closest we came is we chased a Alouette, which was a French-built helicopter, out of Vietnam into Cambodia, because it wasn't one of ours. And we went after it, but we didn't. Once we got into Cambodia, we broke off the pursuit.
How about just paranormal experiences in general? Have you had anything weird happen with your, you know, while you've been doing this? Because it seems to me that, you know, a number of researchers do have strange things happen to them. Visits from MIB, odd communications, anything out of the ordinary that you might ascribe to being involved with the paranormal or ufology.
I've always wondered about that myself, because some of the researchers talk about this stuff, and I think, you know, people who are locally prominent in the UFO research and do their thing locally, making those sorts of reports. But I haven't had anything. My platform is much larger. I have a national platform to talk from, not only on my radio program, but through the books and the magazine articles. So I have a much larger platform to speak from. So I wonder why I'm not harassed that way. And the other thing I'll point out is it did not inhibit my military career in the Air Force. I got promoted on time and that sort of thing, although they were aware of my interest in UFOs. And when I was getting my top secret clearance, my father actually happened to know the agent who was doing the background investigation on me. And they had like two or three articles I had written that were very critical of the Air Force. Handling of the UFO phenomenon didn't stop me from getting my clearance. When I got into the Army, the National Guard, before I went to Iraq and was getting my top secret clearance renewed, none of that ever came up. In fact, they were delighted with talking about UFOs to me.
That's really interesting, actually. And and because you are a genuine military person, you have experienced what it's like to actually be a military person. And so we'd like to get your perspective on a couple of things, like, let's just say, top secret clearance. Now, we hear about these things, like there's this above top secret clearance, or the president can't get access to something. And I'm kind of skeptical about that. I mean, he's commander in chief, is he not? How does this really work?
I've always said, if I'm the president and I ask somebody for information, and he tells me or she tells me, I'm sorry, Mr. President, you can't have that. It's classified over your head. The next words out of my mouth are, you're fired. Bring in your deputy.
All right. Yeah, this is what I figured.
I have power. I have the power to get anything I want. I'm the president. And if you're not going to give it to me, I'll find somebody who was. You get out of my office right now. Talking about above class secret, I think it's more of a lateral type thing. There are code words and then code words on code words. So when you say something is classified 2 points above top secret, I think what they're saying is, okay, you have a top secret clearance, but to get this specific information, you have to be code word cleared as well.
Let's explain all this military jargon in the next segment. For those who weren't in the military, Gene Randall, Kevin Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNlife.com or toll free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNlife.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
As congressional investigators, we're listening to a former ambassador explain how the president and his attorney came to remove her from Ukraine.
the president held a political rally in Louisiana.
You are going to fire your Democrat governor who's done a lousy job.
President Trump led a campaign rally against Louisiana's Democratic governor, but the impeachment inquiry in Washington remained his main focus.
All of our nation's gains are put at risk by a rage-filled Democrat party that has gone completely insane.
Chief Democratic investigators announced more depositions of diplomats involved with Ukraine after spending hours with ex-Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, who testified despite administration efforts to prevent that. This is USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product. Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I've treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from six different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So Kevin D. Randall is defining here what top secret means, with two levels above top secret means. Is that like a subcategory then?
Not really a subcategory. You're doing a specific mission, or you have a specific program that's classified top secret, but it has a code word attached to it. The code word can be anything. Code word could be majestic. I shouldn't do that.
You're baiting us.
but there's a big book of code words so that you don't mix up code words and things like that. And you select it from that. So you pick a code word that goes with the top secret. So to get to the information, you have your top secret clearance, but if you aren't code word cleared, if you aren't cleared for that specific project, you can't get the information. Then it can be further defined by a second code word as well, or eyes only, for example. It's code word eyes only. So it restricts the number of people who have access to that specific information, so that it becomes if it's highly critical information, it can be buried underneath all these code words and restrictions to keep people from getting at it easily. Once you have a top secret, it doesn't mean you can see everything that's top secret. You have to have what's called a need to know as well. So if I waltz into a headquarters and I say, I want information about some project, and they say, what's your need to know? And I say, well, I'm just interested in it. And they say, yeah, we'll see you later, sir. And that kind of breaks down the Robert Dean story about having seen the assessment that he was in NATO and he was having trouble staying awake during his late night shift, the overnight shift. And a lieutenant or colonel, Air Force colonel, took something out of the vault, threw it on his desk and said, here, this will keep you awake. And it was the assessment. And I'm thinking, I cannot perceive of any circumstance where any officer would pull a top secret document out of the vault and give it to somebody as a way of keeping them awake. His story just didn't make sense to me. There's other ways to keep him awake. Well, Sergeant, why don't you stand up and run in place for an hour and see if that will keep you awake? You have to look at all of that stuff. You know, Dean had no need to know about the assessment is the whole point of that. He didn't have to know what was in it. So you have those levels of classification. When you get down to secret, I think almost every officer in the military has a secret clearance, because it's no big deal. And many, many, many top NCOs have secret clearances, and many, many top NCOs have top secret clearances because they need them for their jobs. When we deployed to Iraq, and I was in charge of the intelligence operation, I had two NCOs working for me that both had top secret clearances as well, because of the nature of the information we would be dealing with. I didn't see any top secret stuff in Iraq, but had I had the necessity to see something, I was cleared. I had the clearances to go see it.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So there, I'm just taking a look at some of my notes here, and I'm saying, yeah, okay. So they had something back in the 50s called the Umbra Code, which was to inform the readers of certain report that it was an original source for intelligence. Then they had another one called Moray and Spoke. So there are all these other categories that you talk about.
There was actually a Majestic,
right?
Top Secret Majestic. It had to do with logistics, and I actually posted the documents on my blog so people could see what it was about. But I cannot conceive of a situation in where they would have two project top secret projects at the same time called Majestic.
At the same time.
Because you get some guy shows up and his order says he's cleared for Majestic, and they're talking about the logistics. And he looks, he's now suddenly seeing alien creatures. So that's another argument against the Majestic 12, by the way, just so you know.
And with regard to documents. And that occurred to me because I was reading that blog entry about a movie, about somebody, or a couple of movies about somebody faking documents.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so since we got into the need to know and top secret clearances and such, maybe we can cover this briefly. What point you're trying to make there for our listeners?
You mean copying the documents or
faking them?
Well, what she was copying, in the movie, were letters and documents held in libraries in their special collections, and she would go in and copy them. She had a lot of typewriters and various papers and everything, so she would go in and make notes of it, and then she would go back home and create the document and then substitute the fake for the real thing so she could sell the real thing and make money. In the military, well, the other thing is, I should point out, I've destroyed an awful lot of classified material, and that's part of the thing you do. When a document is of no longer use to you, or it is expired, a lot of times it's destroyed, and there's nothing wrong with that. You have to log it being destroyed. Secret and above had to be logged specifically classified. You could just do it kind of an enduring, generic thing, but there was documentation that would suggest that it had been destroyed. And I always wondered on the estimate of the situation that we always talk about in ufology, and they say, well, the document was declassified and then destroyed. And I said, well, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And then it did make sense to me.
Yeah,
because once
yeah.
it's declassified, they don't have to log its destruction. There's no longer the paper trail. So they say to the guy, this is declassified, go destroy it. So they burn it. They don't have to log it being destroyed.
And I think Ruppelt was believable. Like, there's a lot of authors, you know, I'm not sure I believe Corso, but Ruppelt.
No, Corso you can't believe.
Ruppelt, I think you can believe pretty much everything the guy says. He just comes across as being way too knowledgeable and was really a person who was there. And he says he held a copy of it in his own hands.
Yes.
So
Dewey Fournet talked about it as well. So there are people who saw it and held the document. But my point simply is this. If it's a classified document, it's classified top secret, it goes up to the chain of command, and Vandenberg says, I don't like the conclusions. What the conclusion was, some of the UFOs were alien spacecraft or interplanetary spacecraft. If you destroy that document, depending on the title of it, you've got to log that title, especially in top secret. You've got to log the title. You've got to log something about the contents. If you declassify it first, then there is no regulation requiring you to log anything. You can just go out and burn it. And I think that's what they did. They would know how many documents, they knew how many copies of the document there were.
This
there
sort of brings up
that many.
This makes a nice segue into, we've got some questions in our question bank that we have to remember to get to before we lose you. Because, you know, when we get talking with you, Kevin, the time goes by so quickly because you're so knowledgeable and interesting to listen to. When we get into this whole advanced aerospace threat identification program thing, and you think back to our other guests like John Alexander, who says, well, I went walking through all the halls of the establishment and found nothing to suggest that any program was going on. How does this happen? You've got to think that there are people up there someplace where all of this information is collected and collated and sorted out for different people. Where does it all go? Does it just, just into file boxes somewhere and people forget about it? What happens to it?
It depends on exactly what it is and what you have. As I said, you know, once the information expires, once it is no longer important, it's destroyed.
Well, let's talk about stuff like these bricks that came out of the radars and the tracking systems that the operators talk about were taken off the ships after the Nimitz incident. Where does that stuff go?
It depends on the classification and depends where they want to store it. There are facilities around the United States where these sorts of highly classified things would be destroyed, would be stored. And there would be a limited number of people who would have access to those facilities. And that access would be restricted even further by what they wanted to look for. So if you've got the Nimitz material in a vault somewhere, and some guy shows up and wants something else that's stored in that same vault, you have a clerk who will take that material out and bring it to the man who wants it, or the woman who wants it, or the woman who needs it, or whatever. But the other stuff remains hidden away.
Let's go into more detail how this works in our next segment. Kevin D. Randall, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, Kevin D. Randall is explaining how this data, these documents are filed.
It depends on the branch of service where it's filed, too. The Navy would have their own facilities for storing the highly classified material. The Army would have their own. The Air Force would have their own. And the Marines would have their own. And the material that is really, really critical, really sensitive, would be stored in a specific location inside a vault. And you might not even be able to get into the building, let alone get near the vault to see the stuff, and the access would be extremely restricted for this highly classified stuff. When you move down the tree to less highly restricted materials, then it's easier to gain access for it. I know that when I was a intelligence officer in the Air Force, we never got anything classified higher than secret, and we had a big four-drawer file cabinet with a combination lock on it. I think it weighed like 700 pounds. So you couldn't just drag it out of the building. And of course, it was, we had a locked door on the outer office and a locked door on the inner office where the safe was. The, air refueling wing that was co-located with us in a different building, they got top secret material, and they had a vault that they kept that material in, but it wasn't that large. And the material they would be getting that was top secret would be operational orders and things like that that they would need to operate.
Okay, so this leads directly into this question in our question bank from Farley Goldstein. And he says, hello, Kevin. I wonder if you have any thoughts or comments on SAP, special access programs, or black budget programs, especially since Richard Dolan has been reporting on what he considers the UFO leak of the century, which is concerned with 15 pages of notes taken by Dr. Eric Davis following his 2002 meeting with retired Vice Admiral Thomas R. Wilson, director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, in July of 1999. Or between 1999 and July 2002, concerning Wilson's failed attempt to gain access to deeply secret and most privatized black budget programs to reverse engineer alien technology. So he's asking about this. He says, any thoughts on how far the military space program goes? And do you think there have been any non-NASA military astronauts, for example?
I about non-military, non-NASA military astronauts, I really don't know. And I will say that with complete and total confidence. I do not know.
I think there's some civilian scientists that have gone up in the space shuttle and stuff like that.
Yes. Right? Well, I'm thinking, talking about them going up in secrecy.
From like a private corporation. You know how so they else have these black budget programs tendered out to private corporations? Do you think anybody like Bigelow has gone up or something like that?
I don't think they're at that point yet. I know there's some discussion about that, and they're getting really worried about, I think, is it Branson getting something into orbit? But I bet that really is a whole different question. It really doesn't, I think, affect discussion of UFOs. You know, of course, Wilson disputes the notes. He says that it's not true. And I have tried to talk to the guy who took the notes, whose name escapes me at the moment, and he is not answering my emails, and he's not answering a lot of other people's emails about this. And some of the things he said, and the one that tripped me up was, I think he talked about the Kingman UFO crash. I think it was Kingman. I haven't looked at this stuff in months. But he talked about a UFO crash that we know was a hoax. It was Del Rio. He was on Coast to Coast, and he mentioned Del Rio as being legitimate. And that's the one that tripped me up, because I'd done a lot of research in the Del Rio UFO crash, which appears in the MJ-12 papers, by the way, which proves it's a hoax. The source of that is a guy named Robert Willingham, who claimed to be an retired Air Force colonel and a fighter pilot. Turns out that Willingham served for 13 months as a low-ranking enlisted man, never was a military pilot, was a lieutenant colonel in the Civil Air Patrol. And for those of you who don't know, the Civil Air Patrol is an official auxiliary of the United States Air Force. It's not like the Air Force Reserve or the Air Guard. It's a civilian organization. They wear military uniforms and go by military ranks, but they're, instead of having U.S. on their collars, it says CAP, and they wear a little metal badge that says, you know, Civil Air Patrol, official auxiliary of the United States Air Force. Willingham was in that organization. His notorious story about Del Rio is completely and totally bogus. And when this guy started talking about Del Rio being true, I knew that he didn't know what he was talking about.
Now that you raise the point of maybe exaggerating one's credentials, we have the case of Luis Elizondo.
Yeah, we better get into that for sure.
And this one, I really don't have the information I need. I talked to Alejandro Rojas about this when we were in Roswell this summer. And he told me, Alejandro told me, that he had seen some documents that suggested that Alonso was who he said he was, involved in this program. I've talked to other people. I know John Greenwald has done a lot of research into this. They suggest he was kind of inflating his importance in the project, and that although his name appeared on a distribution list, which really means nothing at all, and verifying his credentials other than he had some kind of a function in there, the things that bothered me is they don't really ever come out and say things like he served as. And, you know, I would say, well, I served as an intelligence officer in Iraq. I was a captain at the time. If you go to my military records, you write to St. Louis to get my military records. And I did it to see what was on it, see what I would get from it. You'll see that, you know, I was in Iraq. I was in Vietnam. The things that I've said about my military career are all verifiable. You go to the 187th AHC, which is 187th Assault Helicopter Company. You go to their unit roster, you can find my name on the roster and a picture of me in 1969, or actually 1968, I think it was. But the point simply is, we get the idea that Alejandro was a military person, service member. He had an intelligence function, and rank is important. But if he was a top NCO, for example, a sergeant, command sergeant major, that's much better than being a sergeant first class or a staff sergeant. If he was a field grade officer, major, lieutenant colonel, or above, that's much more important than being a second lieutenant or something assigned to that. And we don't have that information. We haven't been able to get that kind of information about who he was. Take him out of the equation and look at the material, the Tic Tac. material and all of that, that becomes important. And the military personnel talking about that becomes important because you know who these people are. They have gone on record saying, this is what I did. This is what I saw. That becomes important. So Elizondo's role in this as kind of the leader of the investigation on the TV program, if nothing else, is kind of irrelevant. What's important is what the people who were there and who we can identify say, and what the documentation they present is, and what the videotapes show. That's all very important material. We need a lot more information, but that's very important material to look at.
And that was basically, that was going to be the question by Elendil in our forum as well. Pretty much you covered almost everything he was asking there. And I have to agree with you that when you see someone like the pilot David Fravor, and I'm sure you've seen his interviews.
Yes.
He seems very believable and very credible. It's hard to imagine that he's just making that up.
I do not see any reason for him to be making that up. He might have misperceived something, but he truly believes what he's saying there. And I think it was Kevin Day, who was a radar operator, talked about the radar returns and that sort of thing. Very credible. We need more information. I can point to any number of places where pilots have misperceived stuff and truly believe they were looking at alien spacecraft when we have a mundane explanation for it now in today's world. And clearly that may happen at some point, but right now what we have is unknown. And the Navy verifies the unknown. Says we don't know what it is. It's unidentified. And that this is kind of interesting because when the Air Force was investigating UFOs under Project Blue Book, they turned backflips to come up with any kind of explanation for a sighting, no matter how ridiculous the explanation was. They abhorred the idea of an unidentified sighting. We get to the Navy, and they're saying, this sighting's unidentified. We don't know exactly what they saw. That's an important thing. We don't have all the information as the civilians out here that the Navy has access to, and I am absolutely sure that if there was a mundane explanation for it, we would know what it is. The fact they're saying it's unidentified makes it much more important.
We've got more to come with Kevin Randall, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Message and data rates may apply. Individual results may vary. Exclusions apply.
But hey, I'm buying a huge flat-screen TV so I can finally see it without my glasses.
Why not just get LASIK at the LASIK Vision Institute? That's what I'm doing.
My glasses and contacts are a pain. I'd love to finally get rid of these, but who can afford LASIK?
You can, because the LASIK Vision Institute is offering dramatically low prices and an absolutely free consultation. Just text DO11 to 350350. The LASIK Vision Institute has already performed over a million procedures. They use the latest FDA-approved LASIK technology that helps the majority of patients achieve 20/20 vision for a fraction of what others charge. Better vision, better value. The LASIK Vision Institute. Make this the year you finally get LASIK. For a free consultation plus an extra 20% discount, text DO11 to 350350. You'll see for free if LASIK is right for you. That's DO11 to 350350.